The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Hello and welcome to a new episode of the Eastern Lariat Podcast, your show for news, notes, reviews and opinions on the world of Japanese pro wrestling here on the MLW Radio Network. Another extremely hot day in Germany. I'm your host, Striga. How's it in the US, Dylan?
It's the middle of the night right now where I'm at, Striga. You know, you hear some of these guys go on podcasts and talk about how they're this hard-working person, they're Mr. G1 and all that. You know, I'm the Chono of podcasts right now. I'm doing it at 4:11 a.m. right now in beautiful Clarksville, Tennessee, just north of Memphis, and also north of Nashville, obviously. If you know geography, you know that it's possible to be north of both. But it's very late at night or very early in the morning, depending on how you sleep and when you need to get up. But either way, it's just a normal day for me because I watch all the shows and that's when they happen. So just like in G1, I'm at the same time watching the shows as I am recording with you. And I'm happy to do it. I'm happy to bring it here. And I'm sorry that it's so hot there because I am not a fan of hot weather. I'll tell you right now, Strick.
I'll tell you.
Yeah. Like I said, if it's me, I'll run the air conditioner all the time.
Yeah,
I said, I don't care.
We're expecting like 80 degrees in Fahrenheit today. So, it's been like this for like 3 weeks now.
Well, like I said, you know me, Strig. I don't care if it's 40 degrees, I'll still walk out with shorts on. So if it's high degree weather, I'm still wearing the shorts. It doesn't matter. But the point is, I really don't like it, but, you know, when it gets summertime, maybe you could get some rain and cool it down sooner or later. I'm hoping for the best for you because I know that you are, I will say this though, you are a fan of going outside and watching wrestling on your laptop as well.
Oh yeah.
So you have some prime opportunities to do that going forward, I would say.
Definitely. And I did watch some wrestling besides the G1 climax this week actually. And I want to quickly talk about it, Dylan, before we go into G1 action.
Sure.
Because in recent days, I've been checking out a little bit of 01. They don't make tape that often, but there will be a show that's going to make tape because they had their 01 Fire Festival finals. And prior to that, I checked out their April show from the Yasukuni Shrine, and I also looked at their YouTube page because they have some stuff up there. Unfortunately, it's ridiculously cut down. The matches are so short, and but you can see some stuff there, and you can guess that the match that you're watching was a very good match. I watched Masato Tanaka versus Jiro Kuroshio from the 01 Fire Festival opening day from July 8. Was a pretty good match. And the Fire Festival basically ran besides the G1 Climax in July, and it finished on this past Sunday, on July 29, in Kuroken Hall, drawing 972 fans, with the finals of Yuko Miyamoto beating Kohei Sato, thus earning the Fire Festival sword and a shot at the 01 Heavyweight Championship, right now held by Masato Tanaka. And the victory of Miyamoto doesn't come out of nowhere, because he has been in 01 since basically 2014, on and off, but he's been a regular since last year. He was in the Fire Festival in 2017 as well, and he has had chances at the 01 Heavyweight Championship before in 2017 and early 2018. He is the reigning Blast King champion, the championship that was basically created for Atsushi Onita when he was still around, and for the Super Fireworks brand that's also operating under the roof of 01. And right now I think it's very likely that Yuko Miyamoto will end up as the 01 world champion.
why not? You know, he's someone that wrestles all over the place.
Yep.
You know, he's very in demand when it comes to wrestling in places like Big Japan, DDT. He even had a world title match in Noah earlier this year. And Miyamoto, he really fits in to Zero One's aesthetic in a lot of ways. I think the only thing I'll say, I'm interested in watching the Fyre Festival shows because when I first started watching Pro Res, Zero One was a big company for me, and one of the first ones that I watched. So I really appreciate Zero One and what they do, their funky yellow ring, sometimes white ring, which looks much nicer. But my only thing on there is I do want to say, because we never really actually talked about this, but I think it's a shame of what happened to Obata and his serious injury. He suffered a very severe injury. I think, what was it? Was it a neck or a spine injury?
Yeah, it was a cervical spine injury, I think.
I think it was spine injury.
Something like that. I gotta look that up. Yeah, it was very serious. There was a match in Sapporo, I think it was, where Yusaku Obata, then the reigning Zero One champion, defended his title against Masato Tanaka. And 25 minutes into the match, Yusaku Obata basically collapsed, standing on the top rope, and he fell to the outside, which looked extremely frightening. And
yeah, that was scary.
Yeah,
that was really scary.
Yeah, really scary. And, well, because title matches and generally wrestling in Japan and in the US as well, when something like that happens, is called as a shoot. Masato Tanaka was then declared the new champion because he won by referee decision. And, well, Tanaka wasn't supposed to win the championship, I'm sure. It looked like they were going to go for a time limit draw in that match because they were already 25 minutes in. And some of the scenes popped up on Battleman news. And luckily now, Dylan, Yusaku Obata had been out on the 0-1 Fyre Festival finals. He greeted the fans and said that he's doing all right, but that there's still a way to go for him to come back to pro wrestling.
That's a great moment for him to come out of that. Big step forward. Regardless of what the future holds in his wrestling, just him coming out there is a really good thing.
Yep.
And I hope for the best for him. I was actually a huge fan of him. His match versus Tanaka early in the year was a really, like, very early. And I think it was on January 1st.
Yeah, the January show. Yep.
So, like, that to me was a really underrated match historically. When Match of the Year rankings come up, I'm going to probably post that match and try to get people to watch it because I really liked it. I thought it was a really great story, and Obata finally winning after all of these years of futility and poor booking, I thought was a great moment.
That's why I couldn't really get so into the match because basically the coronation of Obata should have happened way before that.
Yeah, like I said, I mean, I totally agree with you. Like I said, there's no question that's true. But I thought I was very happy because I thought he would lose again for sure.
Yeah,
in that, to be honest with you. So I thought it was like a legit great, like it was a feel good. It was like a very real moment that he won. If it wasn't like a storyline, it was like real that he got screwed over all these times and he finally won it. I thought that was a tremendous match, and I'm a huge fan of his as a talent. I think he's really underrated among all the indie guys, and I wish for the best for him. I hope he comes back and helps Zero One because, you know, they're kind of just staying in place to say a nice thing about them. But he's someone that is really good on their end. It really helps them. And I hope that he can come back eventually, have a good career. He's someone that I've always had high hopes for that maybe he could move on. But helping Zero One out, being kind of the main star of that company or one of the main stars, you know, he's doing all right on that, and I'm sure he'll just be happy to come back to wrestling. But that injury was very tragic, and him coming back was a great moment and really set off what I hope is a really good show. I can't wait to see that Fyre Festival when it does make tape overall.
Yeah, there was a match between Jiro Kuroshio and Sugi on that show that went to a time limit draw. They even involved the balcony, of course, in Currican Hall. So that's going to be very interesting. And to your point of 0-1, I also got my very first Japanese show that I really got into. I had seen a Big Japan show before because Big Japan and CCW were working together, and I was a big CCW fan back then in 2000. But the show I really that really got me into Japanese wrestling was the first day of the Fyre Festival in 2002, I believe. And I got into that because I was following Steve Corino's career after ECW, basically. And he was a big player in 0-1 at the time.
Yeah, yeah. First of all, who was your favorite CZW wrestler? Zandig?
From my perspective back then?
Yes.
I think from my perspective back then, my favorite guy was the one-man army Lobo.
Oh, okay. Like I said, that's a real name for the past. Yeah. This is a blast for the past for CZW. But it's amazing what happened with CZW working with Big Japan and how that led you to Japanese wrestling at 0-1. Do you remember what your first match was?
Yes, I think I remember what my first match... I'm looking it up as I speak because I think it was a match between Kohei Sato and Hirotaka Yokoi from 0-1. But I gotta look it up. It has to be 2002, the Fire Festival first day. There it is. It actually was not my first. Oh no, or 2003? Am I wrong in the year? Could have been 2003 as well. Let me see.
It was the Kawada.
It was either 2002 and 2003, but I'm not sure. I'm not finding the show right now. But I remember that Kohei Sato and Hirotaka Yokoi were in my first 0-1 match or one of the first matches.
Oh wow! That Fire Festival in 2002 was a wild one. They had people like Samoa Joe, very young. Samoa Joe was in the 0-2 Fire Festival. Ataka, like Taka Michinoku, was there. Otani, obviously. Was it Wing Kanemura in that? Or
he was there too. Yeah,
yeah. So it was a weird time back then in 0-1. Just getting off the ground.
Yuki Ishikawa was in there as well.
Man, his matches, like he had this match with Otani in 2002 0-1, which was just off the charts, like phenomenal. And they never followed up on it. It was like a phenomenal sprint match, like a Hideki Suzuki, type of match in Big Japan that's like really hot for like 5 to 10 minutes. And then in 0-1, they just never followed up on it, unfortunately. That was one of my all-time drop balls in wrestling, was Otani versus Ishikawa in that show.
Damn it. Well, 0-1 had their tournament, and then there's another tournament that's going on besides G1 Climax that I wanted to quickly talk about, because DDT has their King of DDT tournament going on, and in contrast to their D-King Grand Prix, which has a league format, the King of DDT tournament is strictly one elimination tournament. And so they had their first round in Shinjuku Face on July 31st. And you know, the show was very long. It was 4 hours long, and they had 16 singles matches in a row on that show. When I got to the point of watching Daisuke Sasaki against Jason Kincaid in the 14th singles match in a row, I was really getting tired, even though the match was pretty good. And they had some pretty cool matches on that show. I wanted to point out that Yukio Sakaguchi versus Hoshi Tango was amazing, because, you know, Hoshi Tango is this former sumo guy, and he just went out with his sumo slaps on Yuki Sakaguchi, and Sakaguchi didn't expect Hoshi Tango to explode like that, and he had to really fight his way back into the match to get him down to the sleeper hold, which he finished the match in like 3 minutes. Just an amazing match for that short amount of time. And also,
that sounds like fun.
It was so fun. And very fun was Mao against Zanshiro Takagi. I think I've talked about Mao being the spiritual heir of the spirit of Kota Ibushi in DDT. And this match had it all. This match had the bicycles they always have in DDT when Zanshiro Takagi has a match. Mao had a bicycle as well, and they basically crashed with both bicycles. They had all kinds of stuff in this match, most notably plastic boxes. Real solid plastic boxes, and they threw each other on these plastic boxes, breaking them, which looked very painful, to be honest. Well,
that could scratch something on you.
Yeah, definitely. 15 minutes, just an amazing match, so check that out. Yeah, and in the main, Katsuki Hirata got an upset win over Naomi Yoshimura. Because
yes, my man Hirata is my favorite guy.
Hirata
in DDT.
Is only in because Konosuke Takeshita has a shoulder injury and is out of the tournament and is out for 2 months now, which is pretty sad. But it was a fun match.
Hirata's my guy. I wish they'd bring Magna Tokyo back.
Ah.
Like I said, but besides that, he is the true spiritual successor in DDT. But he got a big win. Happy for him. Love Hirata.
Yeah. He's great. And, well, obviously, we got to talk about the big elephant in the room as well, Dylan. Because Shigehiro Irie took the belt to the US.
Oh, yes.
And he lost it to Sami Callihan. Which makes things even more ridiculous than they have been for this Irie title run, which hasn't been received well, to say the least. Because houses haven't been good for his title defenses. Even the Harashima title defense didn't do well. And now he went to the US and they are playing off this storyline that he is going there and defending the title, even though the DDT office tried to forbid him going there and defending his title there. Which doesn't make any sense because when you think back to the Harashima defense, they basically made him face Harashima because Harashima had one of these anytime anywhere contracts. So they were able to make him defend his title against Harashima, but they weren't able to make him not defend his title in the US. So it doesn't make any sense.
Well, maybe those laws, their power only applies to Japan.
Maybe.
So he fled the country to get away from what they were doing.
Yeah.
And went to America to face Sami Callihan. I don't know. This whole storyline, I don't know. I really don't know where they're going right before Peter Pan and while this tournament's going on. I really can't wrap my brain around where they're going with this, but I think a lot of people kind of speculated, and I think it's a logical prediction, that Callihan will lose the title very quickly.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that renders all of this kind of silly. I don't know. I don't know, maybe some people have speculated maybe that Irie can drop this whole character that he's got going on, this heel-ish character, and go back to his normal green self, pretty much.
Yeah.
Some people have predicted, because, I don't know, his heel run just really hasn't connected right now with the fans.
Nope.
Or even in the West, a lot of the fans really aren't a fan of this title reign that he's had so far, so... I don't know. I can't really say where this is coming from because this was an out-of-left-field move. And I will say, a lot of people were talking about it, to be honest with you. More people were talking about this title change than anything I've seen on Irie than in his title reign on Twitter and everything.
Pretty telling.
So,
right?
Exactly. So, but it was more just because of how crazy it was and how nobody could understand it. It wasn't a great reaction by any means, but they were talking at least. That is something, I guess, if that's what they were going for.
I guess. Maybe.
I don't know. What do you think? Do you think he drops it back to Irie?
I think he'll drop it back. I think Irie is in the US for two weeks or so, and I think he'll win it back from Callihan at some point. There are some shows in the Midwest I think he's booked for, and Callihan is a Midwest guy.
Yeah.
And so I think that's going to happen.
Man, 2000 Striga would love Sami Callihan, though.
That's true.
Am I right?
Yeah.
So, he'd fit right in with those CZW guys, I think. The CZW Warriors.
I really loved his match that he had with Pentagon Jr. at Slammiversary.
That was a great match. His promos and Impact are really good. He actually works really well in Impact. Not so much in New Japan, though, when he came.
No.
But he's someone that really needs that kind of storyline element and promos and things of like that to really get his matches over. Because even that match was a heavy storyline based. You had the mask versus hair match. You had the storyline of Penta breaking Ohio's for Killers arms. So like that all kind of came together to make a great hardcore style match. It wasn't a traditional match. So I don't know. I don't think he really fits in any kind of Japanese promotion, let alone DDT. But you know, this is just like you said. I think this is a very minor storyline point, more than a big deal, like or something that's long term. And I do agree with you that Irie will get the belt back very soon. And I think it makes all the sense in the world. I don't know to what end or where that's going, but you know, like I said, it got people talking, and that's the best I could say about it, more than anything.
That's true, and you know, our main talking point today, the G1 climax, of course, is something that the people still talk about because the tournament is still running. And we're here to talk about days 11, 12, and 13 of the G1 Climax, the first of which happened on Monday. And you'll have to take care of that here, because on Monday I had some troubles with my wisdom tooth. And I was close to being knocked out, and I was so tired because I couldn't sleep because my teeth hurt so much the night before. So I watched the show. But at some point, I almost fell asleep. Not because the matches weren't great. Well, they were good. But I was just so knocked out because my teeth hurt. So, Dylan, let's just talk about this show from Monday from Takamatsu. And the first match we saw was Bad Luck Fale versus Togi Makabe. And that might have as well put me to sleep because I think it was the worst G1 match so far.
Wow, Lysa, that is a great and possibly true. Like, I always said the Fale versus Jay White match was the worst, but I think this might be even worse. It's close, though. Like, they were both pretty bad, to be honest. But this definitely was not anything to be proud of. And they did the ref pulling out spot that everyone loves so much with Tangaloa. Have you noticed on the undercards that Loa gets all of... He's like the most protected member.
Yes, he gets all of them.
Yes, he's so much more successful than everyone else in this group for some reason. But he's also undefeated against Red Shoes, pulling him out of the ring so far, too. Makabe got docked with a chain, and that was it, pretty much.
13-0. For Tangaloa against Red Shoes right now.
Huge win streak. huge bust. this storyline, I think, overall. Because, this was only 8 minutes. I think that might be why I kind of liked this. I didn't like this in any way, but I think it was about the same as White in my head. They were both terrible. Nobody should watch them, I think.
Okay.
that's the real point.
On overall. The topic of Jay White beat Hangman Page in 17 minutes, moving to 8 at that point. What do you think about that match?
This was super flat, way too long, and it had the same stuff we see all the time with Jay White. Not a good match, I thought.
Oh, he went to 6 at that point, I think. All right. I'm not sure. Yeah, I think 6.
Yeah, yeah. This went 17 minutes. You had the stuff with the ref, the low blow, and then one with the Blade Runner. I thought Paige... Again, first of all, I don't think these two have very good chemistry at all, but it was, if there was to say anything better, this was quite a bit better than their first match in America earlier in the year, but still nothing anybody, I think, would really go back to watch at all. I didn't really like it at all, to be honest with you.
3.25 from Dave Meltzer, 6.77 from Cage Match users right now.
That's nice. I think I had that at 2. So the first one I had at 1. So it's twice as good as their previous match to me. That first match was really bad.
Okay.
This was quite a bit better than that. This was better than their first match. But I can't imagine anyone going back to watch this match.
The next match was Minoru Suzuki. No, not Minoru Suzuki. Was it? Yes, it was.
Yeah. Suzuki and Evil.
Right. Suzuki and Evil. A little bit better than the Hangman and White match, even though, I pointed out Evil as my MVP on the last show, and I didn't really... I don't think that assessment is fair at this point, because Evil had a lot of these mid-card matches, and these mid-card matches were good, but not to the extent great. But the thing is, in this block, nobody really has been outstanding, in my opinion.
Oh, not even close.
No, so I still might as well go with Evil, but I was so disappointed that he's now eliminated at this point already. Minoru Suzuki went up to 8, and he basically just beat Evil in 12 minutes, and that was it.
I thought, like, when they actually wrestled, I thought they had a little bit of good stuff going on. Like, But there was a lot of the floor stuff and the chair stuff that we, again, maybe if this were another tournament, it wasn't so overdone, I might be a little more forgiving, but it just felt like another bland mid-card match that these two, I think both of these two are pretty guilty of this. And I was surprised when you mentioned Evil, because no offense to him, I don't think he's had a bad tournament, but he has been someone that's really like, not stood out at all to me.
No.
When you look at this whole tournament.
Yeah, and like last year he had this great run, he beat Okada. And I was kind of expecting that he wouldn't play a big role in this tournament, even though I'm still sad that he's out at this point already.
I'm a fan of his too. I was really looking forward to him. I've always been a fan of his. Well, not always, but for a long time I've been a fan of his. I was actually listening to Joe Lanza's Patreon podcast where he listed all the MVPs and he ranked Evil last.
Oh,
Striga, after you said he was the MVP of A Block, he like ranked him dead last, 20th. Even below Tonga, which is very harsh, in my opinion.
I don't know about that.
Harsh, but I think what he was trying to say was even these bad matches at least have a storyline purpose with Tonga and these dudes. But Evil is kind of like, he's just kind of a mid-card guy in A-Block now. He's not really having
there.
Any story.
That's true.
But I still think that's too much.
Too harsh, I think.
Suzuki is not having a fantastic tournament either. He had this hot run early on in the year, and I think a problem with the A-Block, like if you, and I've done this, and maybe we'll talk about it a little bit after the night 13, but if you average up all my star ratings for everybody, there's like this big block of people like that are all kind of the same, but if you look at someone like Hangman, even though I didn't like his match with White, it feels like there's all these guys that are kind of the same level, and everyone else is kind of not giving it their best effort. It feels like they could do a lot better. And then Hangman's just doing everything he can to get to that point.
Yes.
And working as hard as he can. And I think that's what really makes someone like him stand out more than an Evil.
But I think it's
kind of the same. I feel like they're kind of the same.
I was really going into the direction and pointing out that of all the people in Block A, as you just said, Hangman is trying the hardest, I think. Because he really wants to...
Yoshi's trying hard, too.
Really, Hangman has to leave a bigger impression than Yoshihashi has to, because Yoshihashi is a home guy from New Japan, and Hangman gets his first shot here, and he really has to deliver. And I think he really does, because I've seen a lot of people getting into Hangman Page's matches because he just tries so hard, and he's so motivated, and he really gives his body. You know, like many people at this point really have. Big problems with their bodies and have many injuries, and Hangman is still doing this ridiculous top rope moonsault to the outside at this stage of the tournament. It's crazy. So yeah, he's really giving it all.
It's both a blessing and a curse to be in this, because he can't really have any standout. Like, if you look at his matches, I don't really rate them all that high, but I think his performance is better than them, because he hasn't had really any help. Has he faced Yoshi yet? I think Yoshi's his next match.
Yes, his next match would be Yoshi, I think.
Yeah, so I think that's going to be a really good sleeper match, because both guys are going to try their hardest. And that's something you don't get really in a lot of these matches overall.
Yeah, Yoshihashi. He was in the next match on this show. He faced Hiroshi Tanahashi, and I called for the upset. It didn't happen. But you know, Dylan, in the end, I was kind of happy with the result, because New Japan has been under criticism for their 50-50 booking at some points. While we have always pointed out how this kind of 50-50 is much different from what WWE does with their 50-50 stuff, here we had a clear winner in Hiroshi Tanahashi, who moved up to 10 points, and we had a clear loser in Yoshihashi, who stayed at 2 points. So they are making it abundantly clear in this tournament who the top guys are and who the bottom players are. And this was a good match, even though I was surprised about the finish, and some people even thought that the finish looked as if it wasn't planned that way. What did you think?
I thought the finish... It's just hard because the butterfly lock in and of itself is kind of a weirdly applied move.
Mm.
And he basically countered that into a roll-up, type of deal for the win. It looks so awkward in the first place that any kind of finish like that will kind of not play well, or not look normal, so to speak. I thought this was a good finish. I thought it was a surprising one. But it does feel like they had a bit left in the tank if they were going to go somewhere with this. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know about that. But I just think it's more the move itself looks kind of wonky. And that's kind of what led to it. But I thought it was a solid match. Again, a little bit better than the others, but there really wasn't anything on this Night 11 show that I was going crazy about. No. But this one was a solid match. I thought, too, that they had... they started to get the crowd behind Yoshi again, which is a very nice thing, considering how much he loses. I think that's a testament to him and his hard work, that the crowd even gives him any kind of chance, pretty much. So I was happy to see that. But, you know, Tanahashi wins. I didn't expect anything else, to be honest. But, you know, Yoshi, he's my MVP of A-Block so far. Just barely. He fell down a little bit of his last match. But we'll go a little bit into that later. Yeah. Tanahashi, I don't think, has had a great tournament either.
No, I was expecting him to really go back into his great singles matches role. But I don't know what it is about Tanahashi in this G1. But it feels to me that all of his matches are basically the same. There is this one formula that he's going by, and he is applying that for all of his matches. And some people will say that Tanahashi always does that, but that's not true at all. When you look at other big matches that Tanahashi had, this tournament, it looks like his match... I really can't tell apart any of his matches that he had so far.
And that's why I like this finish of this Yoshihashi match, because it was something different, you know? As some people can say that. I think it's nice that he tosses this out, kind of like when he beat Naito with the clover leaf. Mm. I like that he tosses out something different every now and then, and I thought this was a good example of that, but I agree with you for the most part.
Could help out in the end when he faces Okada. Just imagine him going for this clutch and getting a near fall, all of that. That could lead to a great moment in their match.
Yeah, totally. I totally agree with you. And I really agree with what you said about his tournament, too. He's not been a standout at all. It feels like, to be honest with you, it feels like a lot of these guys in A-Block really are coasting in a lot of ways. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe so I'm wrong. Yoshihashi looks banged up. And another guy who we know is banged up is Michael Elgin, because apparently he is working with a torn biceps, which is crazy to think about. And he still... and he's still got this great match out of Katsuyuki Okada in the main event, because at any show, I think, or at any point in the New Japan year, this match would be more talked about, I think, than it is now. It's still got 4.5 from Dave Meltzer and 8.19 from the Cage Match users, but amidst all these great matches we have had in the G1 Climax, I think this pales a little.
Wow, I must have really underrated this match, because to me, I did think it was the match of the night. I will say definitely on this show, I thought it was the best match. And a rating like that would have to put it near the top of the A block from a lot of people, I would think.
Yeah.
Of this whole thing. But to me, I thought it was a solid match. Mm. I thought the first half was a little empty and bare a little bit. But when they got going, I thought they really turned it up and had a really good match. And I like what Elgin's been doing in this tournament. I think you can make the case he's been another one of these guys that it. And there's no doubt if he's working through a torn bicep that he's trying hard. You can't say he's coasting if you have that. I actually, to go back to what we said earlier, I do think Evil might have a little bit of an injury issue too as well. If you look at his leg, there's a lot of tape on it in his match with Suzuki. That's just speculation on my top part, not confirmed. But I do think he might be a little injured right now. And this Okada match, I think Okada's starting to stand up a little bit, not to jump ahead again, but after the 13th night, somehow he miraculously jumped up to being tied for second in my star ratings. Mm. After a pretty lackluster first half of the tournament, I think that shows you where this block is, first of all. But he has got, I thought this match and, what was his match? Yeah, and the match on night 13, I thought were both really stand out for A block overall.
Yeah. I think you can say that. But let's move on to Block B for the time being, night 12 of the G1 Climax. We went to Kagoshima, to the Kagoshima Arena. And first of all, I want to point out a storyline that's going on the undercard. And the storyline, of course, is Jay White and Chaos.
Yeah, we talked about this a little
last time. This also went on the show. Where's JY? Oh no, the JY did a singles match. This is the show I'm talking about, the Kagoshima show. I watched this one with the English commentary, and on the undercard there was a match between Sho and Yoshihashi on one side and Jay White and Yo on the other side, and Yoshihashi made Yo tap out to the butterfly lock while Jay White was watching on, because Yo was supposed to hit his own tag team partner while Jay White was holding him, and Joe refused. And Jay White was furious about that because he has been trying to say that Yo has to follow his lead in order to become a success. And Jay White knows the way to success in his mind. And Yoshihashi and Sho were furious about that. And on commentary, Rocky Romero was very hesitant to really make a statement about that. And also on the show it was the show on Wednesday. I was just talking about in the show on Friday. It's a show on Wednesday and Thursday. I'm throwing this all around here. Shows on Wednesday and Thursday. We are of course talking about.
Yes.
And on the Thursday show, there was Jay White against Yoshihashi, and Rocky Romero also was on commentary for this, of course. And anyway, he was very hesitant to make a comment about that. He just called Jay White's actions unnecessary. And I would have really loved to see more fire from Rocky Romero. In the end, Jay White got into his face and screamed at him. And Rocky said, "I have had enough of you." But still at this point, it still felt like Jay White is the only one telling the story.
Yeah, like I said, Rocky's really been doing his best because he's been going after Jay on commentary and doing similar to what you said of trying to show that he's clearly not a fan of this, but also trying to be political about it and not outright condemn him for it. So I think that it would be interesting if that leads to some kind of public blow-up on a show, and that leads to a match maybe in the U.S. show in September. Mm-hmm. I could see that being a singles match, Rocky versus Jay, to play off all this. But yeah, Jay, I don't know. Like I said, clarify what you said about only him telling the story.
Well, the only guy in Chaos who really seems to care about this storyline is Jay White. Because no one even talks about it on the backstage segments. Rocky Romero and Jay White may be the only ones who really...
Yeah, I was about to say, you have to count Rocky.
Yeah, you have to count Rocky in because he's on commentary. But I think he really only is there because Jay White calls him out every time he's out there. And Sho isn't on board, Yo isn't on board, Yoshihashi was there because he was in this match and he was furious about Jay White not saving his tag team partner. But basically, it's just this one guy telling the story.
Yeah, like I definitely think it would be better. I thought early on, because they've had White and Yo paired a couple of times on this tour, I thought maybe you could do something where he's favoring Yo and trying to get him over. But here, like when they did that with this Yoshihashi match, it felt like more of the same kind of that, like you said, he's the only one telling this story. So when you look at that, it's hard to tell where they're going. I think that adds fuel to any kind of fire that he may jump to another faction, like the firing squad, when it comes to that. Because I thought that they could tell something good by breaking up Chaos, because I think that faction really needs a facelift and a lot of changes, because if you look at their matches, Rocky, I remember one of the matches for Jay, Rocky was saying something like, because obviously Jay had just cheated to win over somebody, and Rocky had said something like, maybe they act like this in Bullet Club, but we don't do that in Chaos.
Yeah, I remember that.
but the funny thing is, whenever trouble happens, Chaos never really helps any of their own partners. Yeah. And, if there's any matches and somebody cheats, like we're going to talk about in a second, where is this tight-knit brotherhood faction that Rocky keeps bringing up? Because I've never seen that in a long time with Chaos, So I do agree that they could have added a little more depth to this storyline with Chaos, because like you said, it seems like he's just on his own, and it's hard to tell. Like, they could do a 180 on somebody that we're not even thinking of and chart, throw a wrench into all of this, but it's just hard to see right now. And we'll talk more about Jay on the next show, because I have some comments on Jay White after night 13.
Okay. First G1 match on this show was Tama Tonga against Tomohiro Ishii, and as the Tongans have been doing, Tama Tonga ruined a Tomohiro Ishii match. Well, I was kind of intrigued, as I'm always, with this stuff. He beat Tomohiro Ishii, and at least, Dylan, I think you'll agree with me here, they got a cool finish out of that match, because Tama Tonga reversed the vertical drop brainbuster into the gun stun.
What was the storyline this show that you're going to tell us, Striga, for the
Aspiring
Squad? I'm not
going to tell any storyline.
okay, because I thought they didn't want to win last time we checked.
Yeah, but, I know. I got on the show and said I've been telling multiple stories about this storyline on this podcast. I'm not even sure what they are doing at this point. Backstage, you know, what they did now, which is totally, totally goofy, and I don't know why they are doing it. Remember when Kenny Omega brought up his average star rating?
Yes, I remember.
Guess what the Tongans are doing now?
They're dragging down everyone's star ratings?
No, they are talking about how they are getting a 7-star match backstage.
Oh, great. Yeah. Like, even better.
Even better, I know, yeah.
Yeah, awesome.
Listen. Talking about Dave Meltzer's star ratings always gets you a great reaction. Definitely.
Yeah, I love it.
Continue doing that.
You know the Japanese fans, that is what draws in Japan, definitely, as we've seen in the past. Who are these 7-star ratings for his match? I'd love to meet the reviewer that is giving these matches 7 stars, because I don't know, man. Like I said, maybe more like 1 might be more apt for Tama Tonga's and Ishii's match here. Yeah. And this is Ishii's match, too. It's really spectacular when you have someone like Ishii, someone like Zack Sabre Jr., someone like Kota Ibushi, and this is what we're getting out of them. And so somebody thought this was a good idea. But, you know, like, I've kind of accepted these Tama Tonga and Fale matches for what they are. I still am not praising them at all in any way. I think they're mostly really bad wrestling. This came across a little better than the other matches, but at the end of the day, you've seen the same match 100 times, it feels like. You know, so there's really nothing to add to it. I wasn't into it at all, but that promo, I hate promos like that, the star ratings and all of that, especially in Japanese wrestling, because I don't think that's something the fans really care about at all, and I would recommend them not do it. But maybe to the American fans, the Being the Elite fans, that's something that's really nice. Maybe Dave Meltzer himself really loved that promo, but not me.
I'm not sure. Well, next up, Juice Robinson went up to 4, beat Zanada. 12 minutes. It was a solid match, I thought. Nothing really stood out to me in this one. Just a solid mid-card G1 match.
How do you feel about the unwrapping of the cast this time?
I think we talked about it in our last show, didn't we?
Better or worse? Yeah, we talked about it. I was saying, do you think it's better or worse the second time?
You know, I'm a big fan now, because, as it turns out, of course, the power of Juice Robinson was in his left hand.
And because he's unstoppable.
And because I am left-handed, I'm a big fan of his now, finding back his power that was in his left hand. So I'm all for this now.
Yeah, I saw you mention that on Twitter. So I'm glad you brought that up about the left-handedness. Yeah. But I'm right-handed, so I don't know the power of the left-handed punch. But I can tell you
that it's very powerful.
I believe you. I'm a little intimidated just thinking about it.
You should be.
Unfortunately, but. Yeah. I thought the storyline is playing out exactly as I thought it would. Now that he's got the cast off, he can win and make a big bounce back in the tournament. And I think this was another example of that. Like you said, solid match. This was like a solid A-block match. Like 3-star type of match.
Yeah. And next up, just like Tanahashi and Yoshihashi before, here we had Naito moving up to 10, while Toru Yano stayed at 2. 8 minutes. I thought this match was pretty good. For the mid-card. And what stood out to me here was that Tetsuya Naito took the possibly biggest bump you can take in a Toru Yano match, because he went into the guardrail hard. My God.
He was doing some stuff, too. He had like a... He whipped Yano into the barricades at one point. They did the stuff with the pad and all of that. But, you know, I thought this was kind of exactly what you would expect from these two.
Yep.
It looked like Naito had fun in this match, though.
He did. He did.
Yeah. I think that's really more than anything I took away from it.
Right. Kenny Omega went to 12 points, staying undefeated. He beat Zack Sabre Jr. I thought this match was great. Kenny Omega, as the champion, I think this really stood out to me the most in this match. As the champion, you're supposed to beat the odds. And facing Zack Sabre Jr. has to be a big obstacle for Kenny Omega, because Zack Sabre Jr. is going in a much different style and stylistic direction than a lot of Kenny Omega's opponents are. And Kenny Omega, as the champion, was able to out-wrestle Zack Sabre Jr. and basically beat him with his own weapons when he rolled him up with this crucifix hold. And throughout the match, great reversals, great holds from Zack Sabre Jr., good comebacks from Kenny Omega. I really, really enjoyed this match.
I think you saw the best of Kenny Omega when you had those reversals you were talking about. I thought the finish was great. There's one issue I have that made me like this a lot less than a lot of other people. This match, Zack really worked on the leg of Kenny Omega.
Yes.
And then you know that that's bad news in a Kenny Omega match, because we saw what came, and I thought the leg selling really was not what it could have been. It was questionable at best, to say the least. But so that's really why I thought it was a little less than everyone else. But it was not a bad match at all. And I thought Zack himself, I thought, was just phenomenal in this match. Omega had great points, but some low points too. I thought he was a little up and down in this match, and a very good kind of snapshot of Omega as a worker, because I think he's got many great points, but many that I'm not necessarily a fan of. And I think we saw that in this match. And Zack, I thought, did a great job. Even after the match, that look he gave was phenomenal.
Yes,
his reaction to losing.
Oh yeah, it was his reaction to losing. And Jamesy on Twitter brought up a great point. The point I made was Zack was furious because he was beaten in his own game by Kenny Omega. And the second point that Jamesy noted was that Zack was also furious because that eliminated him from the tournament, because Kenny Omega moved up to 12, he stayed at 6, so Zack is out of the tournament. And he really sold that frustration about being out of the tournament here.
Yeah, I think that was a great thing. And that's really the G1 is really one of the best places for something like that to come off. And that, to me, is way better than talking about 7-star matches or anything like that. Saying I'm out of the tournament and that devastates me is a lot better than what Tama Tonga said, in my opinion.
Yeah, so we had the main event left here in a match that was on a similar level as Kenny Omega versus Zack Sabre Jr., even though I think I favored the Omega versus Zack match. Kota Ibushi beat Hiroki Goto with the Kamigoe, and going into that match, Kota Ibushi had to win, because otherwise his chances of winning the block would have been very, very slim.
Yep.
Even
maybe. So did Goto. He had to win too.
Yeah, Goto was eliminated at this point, still at 4 points. And what I noted on the backstage comments is that Tetsuya Naito always makes fun about Hiroki Goto, because Goto said that the NEVER title is bringing out the best in him. And Naito said, well, I think he's still at 4 points, isn't he?
he just got eliminated. First of all, I really like this match. The problem is that Zack stylistically really brought that out of Omega. And this match was a great match. If this was an A-block, this would be the best match of all the A-block matches, in my opinion. But this is like both guys' third or fourth best match in B-block, you know?
Crazy, right?
So it's hard. And these two in particular, to me, are leading the charge of B-block, in my opinion. And to have, this was a great match, like I said, but when it's your third or fourth best match instead of the best match of the block, it's a lot harder to stand out. So I can see why people would pick the other match, even though I thought that was a more flawed match. I really thought that they really built to a match, and I thought this was a great match in terms of no real, you know, they didn't reinvent the wheel with this match. They really just had a solid match. They built up and built up and built up to the finish. And it's like they had a great conclusion, because I thought really by the time they had that great near fall on the last ride, I thought the crowd was really into it, and then he finished it right there. There was no really extended sequences or anything like that. He kicked out of the last ride, the Kamigoye finished it, and Ibushi got the win and took out Goto. Yeah, and I thought the crowd was really into it.
Remember, we have been talking about Goto in a similar way when we talked about his match with Tetsuya Naito. He gets out there, has these very good matches, and that's about it. But it still, I think, puts, as you mentioned...
Not against Ishii.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It still puts him up in the block. You can make a case for Hiroki Goto being up there. But do you think, Dylan, that Kota Ibushi has a case for being the MVP of the entire tournament?
Yeah, like I said, right now, I think the top three are Goto, Ibushi, and Ishii.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of just pure matches, like Goto to me, I can't really co-sign that because I look at that Kenny Omega match that he had where he threw the chair at him, like one of my favorite spots in the tournament. You look at that Sonata match, which I really think kickstarted Sonata to have his great tournament and helped him. He's up there too, by the way, Sonata. But I really loved what he's done. I really loved what Ibushi's done. They're both right up there. I think Ibushi has a great case for it, and Ishii does as well. I just can't get over the fact overall, though, Ishii had the match with Goto and the match with Ibushi. So to me, they both have their own great things, and Ishii has both against both of them. So I think if I had to pick who had the best so far, I would pick Ishii of everybody.
Mm-hmm. You know, in the point of wrestling a smart game, I think Zanada has been the standout in this tournament. You mentioned him. He's up there.
He's a breakout.
He definitely is a breakout, and he has had so many different matches in this tournament. And, of course, Ibushi and Ishii will stand out much more because of their high-performance matches that they have had and because of their dangerous matches and their willingness to put their bodies on the line. But when you talk about wrestling a smart game, I think nobody tops Zanada in this tournament.
Yeah, I just think he's got the fresh face more than anything that helps him too. He's still a kind of someone who's not really in that main event scene and hasn't been around too long to where there's no hope like someone like Ishii or mm-hmm. Goto. Sonata's still got that hope that he's really on the rise still, and I think that helps make him look good. I think people want to see new blood, and whenever somebody new comes along that hasn't been in the main event, similar to Evil last year, we mentioned him last year. If you see somebody like this who's having a good tournament, really good actually, and they're still on the rise, I think that makes people invested in them. Never mind what he's doing in the ring or how good his wrestling is. That makes people invested in him.
Yeah.
And that's a problem with Goto. A lot of people in the West aren't necessarily invested in him or his story because they just don't think he's going anywhere. So when you see somebody like Sonata, who they're getting behind and they have a chance for, I think that helps people a lot. That goes a long way for Sonata himself. And as you said, he's done a great job, had good matches with various people, and Sonata having a great tournament, no doubt about it. All four of those guys are up there to me. I think those are the top four, and everyone else is on a bit of a different level for one reason or another, in my opinion.
So after this show now, the only three who are still eligible to make it to the finals are Kenny Omega, Tetsuya Naito, and Kota Ibushi. And you can be critical about that it's so early that everybody else is eliminated. But on the contrary, who really was expecting anybody else to make it to the finals than these three?
For me, I agree with you. I will say that. I think you're absolutely right. My only caveat is that Goto and Juice should... I think it's a bad look to have the champions.
That's true.
Eliminated so early. Like that to me is where they messed up. Having these guys go 2-4, especially Juice to me, because he just won the title. I guess Goto technically had just won it because he lost it and won it back. But to have the champions, I think you should go out of your way to make the champions mean something. And that's a problem we've had with this company for a long time now. And I don't think this G1 has helped that reputation at all for either the U.S. or the NEVER titles. And we always talked about it. We were like, hey, which title is the best one of all the undercard titles? I guess we're seeing that the Intercontinental is the number, the number one now.
Well, at least the IC champion couldn't lose any matches.
Exactly. It's like these other guys, they're coming in looking like losers, have the same record as Tonga and Ishii. So I think that was really my only caveat. I would still have had those guys involved somehow. There's no reason they can't still lose like later on and fall back to 8 points or whatever you have planned for them.
Mm.
But ultimately, in the grand scheme of things, you're correct. Ibushi, Naito, and Omega are the guys.
Yeah, if you look at the blocks, it probably wasn't a good idea to pair the mid-card champions with the heavyweight champion and to make an all-champions block. Yeah. Juice or Goto in block A would have helped them much better, I think. Goto.
Oh, that would have helped the block, too.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Goto would have been a standout in block A for sure. And they both wouldn't look so bad as champions.
Yeah, I'm you know, it's funny because we talked about it. I'm not really in love with Juice's tournament right now, even though I'm a fan of his. He hasn't stood out to me as much as I was hoping. Because I thought, I was so, you know, Strig, I was so on his hype train after that Jay White match. I thought he got super slighted by a lot of the fans. I thought he deserved way more credit for that match. I thought he was going to have a huge G1, be a breakout star, that kind of like Sonata is right now. But it just hasn't come together and be blocked with the cast injury and everything like that.
That's the point, you know. I think Juice is doing a very good job telling this story.
Yeah, I agree.
The problem there is, and the minor gripe that there is, and I think that's why you don't have him as a standout, is the storyline is so patterned. Mm-hmm. It's so very clear and so obvious what they are going to do here now that it doesn't stand out.
Yeah, I think I said that like after the first or second show that I did that this was where it was going. I think if you have the trained eye, so to speak, I think you could have seen this coming from a long way away. And I agree with you. And a lot of their stories are kind of like that, where it seems like it's too far out. I do appreciate that they've booked Omega, regardless of my qualms on his matches, or his matches are okay. The promos I dislike quite a bit, but my qualms on him. I like that they booked them strong.
Well, if you actually watch the Japanese promos that he does, these promos are very good. Mm-hmm. What isn't good are his backstage promos in English, where he goes over the top. That's true.
Yeah, I agree. But I like that they booked him strong. Was basically my point. What do you think of him? Because nobody would have predicted him going undefeated through six matches. I think
I'm a big fan of that. As I'm a big fan of Tanahashi being strong, and I'm a big fan of just guys being portrayed as the top guys, and that's what they are. And the champion is supposed to win a lot, and that's what Kenny Omega is doing. So So it will make a potential upset that we're maybe getting in Osaka on the weekend look even bigger.
Your predictions, you let me down with Yoshihashi.
I know.
But I do think. If he wins this, he's going to win the block, like, pretty much, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Like, so, he has to lose. Like, honestly, he has to lose to have the drama.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I like that. I love what they're doing with the champion, especially. I like strong guys, too, but especially the champion. I love to have a strong world title holder, somebody who's a cut above everybody.
Exactly.
I think that's a great storyline. And you could tell going in, ultimately, you had the little minor story with Juice. You had little minor stories with Yano. You had this Tonga deal, but ultimately, the main people were Omega and Naito, and Ibushi is a side character. Like that, those were the three guys overall, and I think they booked that out from the start, and they've executed it perfectly in B block. So I cannot complain on that end. I think they've done a great job with the champion, and I think that's really good booking to put Omega in. And I think it's something that nobody was really expecting going in to have these guys booked so strong. You know, so I really like that.
Definitely. So, we are moving on now to Block A again, the show that happened on Thursday, Fukuoka Citizen Gymnasium. First G1 match. We've already talked about the undercard stories that they have. And now, first G1 match, here was Michael Elgin against Bad Luck Fale, 11 minutes, 13 seconds. Elgin won by DQ. And I want to read out what I tweeted about that yesterday, Dylan. I said, quote, Bad Luck Fale versus Michael Elgin was well on its way of being Fale's best G1 match since the Tanahashi match, but here we are, the Tongans won't let us have nice things.
Man, I couldn't have said it better myself, because I thought the exact same thing. I thought Fale looked better here than he had in pretty much the entire tournament. Elgin, again, getting the best out of somebody. I like Fale. I think he's done a great job on that. He's fulfilled his role perfectly.
They had this great arm storyline they had going on in this match with Elgin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, and I really like.
Well, it's part of his storyline, but it's also very real that he has this bicep injury, so that played into it.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, like you said, it all came back to the stuff. You got to talk about a pattern storyline. I said, we had this here. Loa came in, and you know, I thought it was, I don't know. You know, I didn't like this match that much because of that. But I did appreciate the effort from really both men, but especially Elgin.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. Next up, Hangman Page got his second victory in G1, and I was very happy for him. Thought the match against Togi Makabe was okay, but the finish really stood out to me. A very decisive victory in the end for Hangman Page, as he went for the buckshot lariat that always, it looks so amazing every time he hits it. He hit Makabe with the lariat, and then just got the win with the rite of passage, and looked very strong in this one.
Yeah, they didn't really go long on this one.
No, this was 9 minutes.
This wasn't actually much of a match overall. It was just a nice little match, but nothing crazy.
Match that lived for the finish.
Yeah, exactly. Like that. This was really just to get Paige a win here, and that's great. He still worked hard, even in these 9 minutes. I thought he still tried his best. Makabe, I think, has fallen off a little bit because I thought he got off to a pretty surprisingly good start. You had that match with Yoshihashi that started the tournament. Mm-hmm. I thought he was doing some good things. He's kind of fallen off the later the tournament's gone, and that's fine. He's older.
Do you remember what I said about Farley? I'm always talking about Farley here.
Do you remember what I said about
Makabe going into the tournament after his first two victories? I basically said that they could go in a similar direction as they went with the Hiroyoshi Tenzan in his last G1, where he picked up wins early on and then dropped off. And I think they're going in a similar direction with Makabe now.
Yeah, and I think that this is perfectly fine. Paige worked hard. You know, it's Makabe. Who cares? Like he's over with a lot of the fans, whether he wins or loses. He's a little older now. Paige, up and coming. No reason he shouldn't have got this win. So I was happy for him too.
Yeah, definitely. A match I was not happy with was Jay White against Yoshihashi.
No.
9 minutes 48 seconds. Whew. This was a rough one.
You know. One of the things I'm hearing a lot about Switchblade is how he's this super over heel in Japan. And I'm looking at this match, and I'm looking at that Fale match, and I'm really not seeing it, to be honest with you. I'm not seeing this doing wonders for anybody, but least of all me. Because I thought this was Yoshihashi's clear worst match of the tournament. And dropped him way down. Mm-hmm. And gave A-Block a fighting chance in my ratings. But... yeah, White, this was not a good match at all. I just, and on top of that, first of all, it really felt like there just really wasn't any kind of fire to this. There wasn't really any kind of sense of urgency.
That's what I was pointing out earlier about this storyline.
Yeah.
There is no fire to it. And after, it basically all began when Okada just brushed it off in the beginning, and he said, well, it's okay.
Mm-hmm. I said, hey, I was on that board since January when he blew off his storyline and it continued.
I don't know about that. This chaos storyline really only started when he turned on Okada on the first G1 day.
The first thing he said was that he was going to turn on chaos.
Yes, that's true. But they didn't really.
And what was
go
it, what
out
was
of the way to tell the story until this G1 started.
But even still, what was Okada's reaction that first day?
Yeah, I know. He didn't take him seriously. Yeah. That was his reaction to it.
Exactly. And what was his reaction after the first G1?
He didn't take him seriously. That's true.
Exactly. Yeah. So, like, this storyline, like I said, I was on that from the very beginning, that was a mistake. But overall, you just got to look at these matches. And at what point do we just say this guy's not delivering? Because it's been 8 months now, and I think his tournament has been very, very lackluster.
The tournament matches, they haven't been great. I agree with you, but
and I don't think this is over. I don't think this is over on Yoshihashi or the Fale. You know, everyone's going to point to that Okada match.
It's not over.
Yeah.
The fans are not giving him a great reaction, but I still think that Jay White is getting the most out of this character. That's what I think is happening right now.
The character work, that's an entirely different issue.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like I said, that, like, that's a completely different subject, because I agree with you. I like him as a promo. I think he's done so much better than I ever thought he would. Mm-hmm. But when you look at this tournament, he should be one of the top stars and the ones people are talking about coming out of it. But when I look at how this has gone, I really don't see that at all. I don't see any kind of hot star like in him. I don't think he's really gotten anything. I don't think the storyline has done anything for anybody. And I don't think his wrestling has been where it should be. Like, that's just a real talk right there. And, you know, if you look at it, I know he's got a lot of fans. I know people listening to this really love Switchblade, love the character. I like him as a character worker. But I'm just talking big picture. If this continues, if he keeps up at this level, like this, he's not Shono, you know? Like, people keep talking about he's the only true heel of New Japan. But he doesn't have that cachet with the native fans, is what I think some people don't understand. Mm-hmm. And this character, these matches, I actively do not think this is working, in addition to being very lackluster in ring.
Well, I think he has shown very good glimpses of his wrestling in his matches. I talked about him, I talked about his suplexes, I talked about him delivering the Saito suplex, and I'm a big fan of his Saito suplex, but I think he's really handicapped by having to portray this character. While on the other side, I think he's doing great in portraying this character, but it just handicaps his wrestling.
I actually agree with that, to be honest with you. Now that you say that, I completely get your point. I do think that it affects him. And you look at his matches, there's always some kind of nonsense. Again, in this tournament, I think it hurts him being paired in the same tournament as Tonga and Fale. And a lot of stuff, really. Like, even Yano against Suzuki and Yano, they also have their own nonsense in their matches. Mm-hmm. And I think once you pile it all together, it really kind of takes away from all of it. And I think that's why these storylines really aren't clicking right now. And I think Switchblade is at the top of the list for something that... Remember when this G1 started, everyone had all of these high hopes for Switchblade, and that he had found himself after that Juice match, which I said Juice was the one that deserved more credit for. I just want to point that out. But Jay, it's been a rough tournament. And this was a rough match. I thought this was easily Yoshi's worst match of the tournament so far.
Hmm. Yeah, I think so. You talked about Fire earlier, about Fire in the storyline, and for the next match, I really missed the Fire. Tanahashi and Evil was a match that didn't really grab me, and we can go back to talking about Tanahashi and his pattern matches in this tournament. I think this was another one. Nothing bad at all, but nothing outstanding either.
No, this was the very definition of a solid... another three-star match. I think that these two are specializing in, and most of A-Block is specializing in right now. Mm. I thought that this match could have been so much better, too. You know, if you had put it on paper in front of me at the start of the tournament, this would be a match I would circle and say, you know, this is something to look out for. You're going to get something great. And here, I just thought it really was lackluster. You mentioned the Fire. And I completely agree with you. I think that really added so much to it. And it seems like, again, I hate to make this point, because I really hate making this criticism, because wrestling's hard, you know?
Mm.
But I feel like a lot of these guys are not giving their top effort, like in A-Block right now. Or maybe in Jay's case, you mentioned the character getting in the way and the storylines getting in the way. I think that's true. But I just feel like this match should have been way better than what it was. And I don't know why, because it was solid. It was not a bad match or poorly worked or anything like that. It just felt like they didn't push it to the next level that it could have been, in my opinion.
Yeah, and that's so sad. And it's so sad that this was the match that got Evil eliminated from the tournament. They could have given him a lot more, in my opinion.
Yeah, me too. I completely agree with you. But I really think that, again, they may have just had two or three people in mind with this A-Block.
And that's fine.
And, yeah.
Because, you know, something I pointed out about Evil, him losing to Tanahashi doesn't hurt him at all at this point, because Tanahashi is probably... It's probably the last G1 that Tanahashi is going to be really big in. When you look at the guys like Makabe and Tenzan, who, of course, are much, much older than Tanahashi, but Tanahashi has been wrestling on this high level for so long that he has these piled up injuries. It's possibly the last big G1 for him, and Evil, he still has lots of G1s to go, and I'm positive that he'll look better next year.
I'm still a fan of his. I still think he's got a lot of talent and a lot of upside. I do wonder if he's suffering from an injury of some sort.
I think he has a knee injury.
Yeah, I think Dave Meltzer pointed out
that he has a knee injury.
Yeah, it's true. If you notice his match with Suzuki, he had a lot of tape on his leg, and Suzuki was mostly going after the arm too. So I thought that was very interesting.
So he's basically pulling through. So you have to give him some credit. I think that has a lot to do with his tournament right now.
And just no one else in A Block is bringing their A game either. Like, to be honest, it's not like it's just him, you know, and he's suddenly way disappointing. I just think he hasn't had the people to bring him up. If he is injured or if he was being lackluster, there's just nobody to bring you up because they're all kind of that same level right now in A Block, unfortunately. Yeah. And I thought this was another match where they were both on that same level.
Yeah, definitely. So, in the main event, Katsushika Okada beat Minoru Suzuki in 18 minutes. You know, last year they had this great 30-minute draw in Suzuki's hometown where Okada went all heel in the middle of the match. Then they had another 30-minute draw for Suzuki's anniversary show earlier this year.
In the rain
in Yokohama. The rain really prevented this match from being great. And I was expecting a lot out of this match. And in the end, I got a solid Okada versus Suzuki match in 18 minutes. And that just ended with Okada delivering a rainmaker, and that was it. Again, much like the match prior to that with Tanahashi and Evil, I missed the fire in this match.
Man, this is such a negative show talking about all these three matches. But I'm with you again, man. There were a couple of things that held this back as well. Like you mentioned, the rain match, the match last year, I think expectations were kind of high for this match. Maybe unfairly so with how things have gone. I also think that there was no drama, in my opinion, of Okada losing this match. I thought there was a 0% chance that anything except the finish would happen. Like, I thought that for sure he would win via the storyline. And that storyline, again, because we mentioned B-Block, their champion, we really like what they're doing with them. Okada, I think, again, it's a really good idea, but not only do I do my criticisms before, that if you've listened to the other shows in the past, if the listeners have heard what we've said before about that, I think those are still very valid, but also it takes away the drama from the rest of his matches until he gets to Tanahashi, because he has to get there to add drama to that last day, pretty much, if you look at the standings. So at the end of the day, I thought for sure Okada would win, and that's exactly what happened. Yeah. And I thought, like you said, this was kind of like, you know, them kind of easing into a good match that they had.
Yeah,
they didn't really
nothing really to point out here. Nothing stood out.
Yeah,
it was Okada and Suzuki having a good match.
Yeah, and I think neither. I think in a weird way, these two have had among the better of the A Block participants. But if you look at how they actually wrestle, just in terms of like match quality overall, they've probably been up there in A Block. But if you look at how they wrestle, it feels like something's missing from both of them, from what you would think of them, especially last year.
Well, you know, as we mentioned with Evil, I don't know if Suzuki or Okada are suffering from an injury, but we're at the midpoint of the G1 climax now. We have seen great matches. Well, not so much from A-Block, but those guys have been through a lot now, you know? And at some point, there is just... They just have to look out for their bodies, and they have to rest a little while still working on top, and that's difficult to do.
Yeah, it feels like all A Block shows are mid-tour shows, though. If you look from the very beginning,
this one more than any show before, because this was the first G1 show where I felt I didn't have to put any matches in the match guide.
Yeah, I agree. I think this is the worst show of the G1 so far. It's unfair to really go too hard on it because it is night 13.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like in baseball. If you're in the, last week, the Cubs, my favorite baseball team, they decided to put Anthony Rizzo, our star first baseman, who's a batting player. They put him on the mound to pitch because it was the 103rd game of the season. And it's like, who cares, you know, pretty much. And these guys, again, it's just kind of like you're in the 13th show of the tour. These guys are banged up. Even if the matches haven't been great, they're still taking punishment overall, yes. You know, so they have to save themselves at some point. But I do think a lot of the storylines have hurt it as well. But besides that, I can't say anything bad about it. B-Block, I like the main event. It just shows, like, those guys, because they, in a lot of ways, like I said, to them, that was their third or fourth best match. But I still thought it was way above anything on A-Block.
Yeah. Yeah, so this concludes our review of night 13 of the G1 Climax. We will certainly be back after this weekend because, Dylan, I think a lot of wrestlers have been trying to get their bodies, trying to persevere their bodies, so to speak, because two shows in Osaka are coming up this weekend, and we'll be talking about that for sure on our next show. So here's hoping for a banger in both Block B and Block A, because we have Tomohiro Ishii and Kenny Omega, we have Naito and Kota Ibushi, and in Block A we have Tanahashi and Elgin and Okada and Evil. So those could be great matches.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I also think it's Yoshi and Paige on that A-Block show.
It's no, it's not. It's Yoshi and Bad Luck Fale.
Oh, okay.
Yoshi and Paige is in Budokan.
Yeah, okay. I said that's a sleeper match of mine, mm-hmm. in A-Block. That's kind of my last bastion. But that show could be good, like you said. Looking forward to Tana and Elgin. I think Elgin's done a great job in terms of getting the best out of everybody, and I think he'll be motivated working against Tanahashi. The arm injury, it's hard to say what role that'll play, but on the bright side, they're both probably hurting a lot and highly injured, so it'll be kind of like a mirror match in that sense. But really looking forward to it, really looking forward to Ishii and Omega. It'll be very interesting to see, but I think I'm hopeful that Ishii could get that big upset win over Omega, because, if he doesn't, I guess Omega wins the block. But one of my original storylines, if you on my solo show, my very first idea when they announced who was in it before they announced the blocks was that Omega would win the tournament, but Ibushi would beat him, and he would name him as his challenger. That was my original storyline before they put them in the same. I put them on the last night of the tour. So, just something to think about, that's all I'm saying on that end.
Yeah, well, so this has been our review of nights 11, 12, 13. Hope you enjoyed it. This has been the Eastern Lariat. We will be back with Osaka. Thank you for listening, and goodbye.
Sayonara.
This is the MLWRadio.com network.